little bit on you know, winging it a little bit. But Rabbi Storchin asked me to speak a little bit about putting things in historic context to make it more meaningful for those who are teaching it and for those who are learning it. So there were two things that popped in my mind. The first thing that popped in my mind, and as I've done this in class many times, and to Balabatim too, is that Ravina and Rav Ashi, who edited the Gemara, did something extraordinary, but at the same time misleading. And that is the impression you get when you go through a Daf Gemara is that Rav and Shmuel, Rav and Rav Yosef, Abayeva Rava, Ravina Rav Ashi, and all the other protagonists in the Gemara were all sitting together in a big room and duking it out over analysis of a Mishnah or a Braisa. And that was done on purpose. It was done in order to see the continuity. But the reality is that many of these men never knew one another, because the Gemara is formulated over a period of 3 centuries. So Rav was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who lived around the year 200 of the Common Era, and the Gemara was edited by Ravina and Rav Ashi around the year 480, almost 3 centuries later. So they weren't all sitting in the same room duking it out, but rather Rav and Shmuel, who were the giants of the first generation of Amoraim in Bavel, Surin Pumbedisa, Surin Nadea, and in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who were their contemporaries. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were the Chachmei Tveria. Rav and Shmuel there, they made analyses, they made statements, the remembrance from them, that served as the basis of all the ongoing discussion that went on for the next 2 centuries. So Rav and Shmuel will make an important statement, an important memory. And a generation or two later, Rabba or Rava, Abayev or Rav Yosef, will analyze, question, and debate, even though they may not have known Rav and Shmuel personally. There was a Masoros in the yeshiva. Here's what Rav said, here's what Shmuel said. And the Chachamim sat and debated and raised questions. And when Rava and Abaye's discussions were later discussed in the same yeshiva a generation or two later, Ravina and Ravash will say, how could Abaye say this? How could Rava say this? It was a long, ongoing process. They were not all sitting in the same room duking it out. So it's important to keep that idea in mind. Okay? Now, how did the Gemara, which is Talmud Bavli, quotes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who never stepped into Bavel? And the answer is, there are people, they were the Rabbanin Nachtoi, those Chachamim who regularly shuffled back and forth between Bavel and Eretz Israel, sharing the Maimorim of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish with the yeshivas in Bavel, and vice versa. Now, had I really done my preparation before giving this off-the-cuff little sheet to you guys, I could have listed the names of them. And some of the names are familiar. Unfortunately, at the moment, Beregalachas, the names escape me. But there are many, many Chachamim who says, Ki also so-and-so, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So there was a constant back and forth through these Chachamim as to what was transpiring in the yeshivas of Bavel, what was transpiring in the yeshivas of Eretz Israel, and that's how so many Maimorim, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi, who are the Talmidim of Rav Yochanan, and other Chachmei Eretz Israel, ended up in Bavel, recorded in the Talmud Bavli. There was this cross-Talmudization, you might say. But it's good for the boys to have at least some sense that the Amoraim found in the Gemara, in fact, stretch over a very long period. That was a Derech HaLibud. What's interesting, guys, is the Chachmei Ashkenaz and the Chachmei Tzorfas did the exact same thing, which developed into Tosfos. Meaning, the Balia Tosfos begin with Rashi's sons-in-law and grandsons, most prominently the Rashbam and Ravin Tam, right? Was Rashi's grandson. And the Chachmei Ashkenaz and Tzorfas that developed the Tosfos stretch again for nearly 250 years. But almost every Tosfos that you and I learn is either analyzing a statement of Rabbeinu Tam or a statement of his nephew, the Ri HaZokain, Rabbi Yitzchak HaZokain, and his Tamidim, who were Reb Shimshon Mishantz, the Rashba, not to be confused with the Rashba from Spain a little bit later, Rashba, or the Ritzva, his brother, Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Avram. Most of those names, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri HaZokain, the Rashba, and the Ritzva, who are quoted extensively in Tosfos, they were the Rav and Shmuel, the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish of the Chachmei Europa. They made the analysis. They raised the questions on Rashi, and all the later Talmidei Chachamim sat, learned, debated, and discussed their Maamarim. That's why you know on the shelf you're going to have Tosfos Chachmei Anglia, you have Tosfos HaRosh, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. All they are doing is re-quoting and reanalyzing the original analyses of Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rashbam, the Ri HaZokain primarily, and others. And of course, in different parts of France and Germany, they developed different masoras how to understand these. But it was the same process. The parallel is striking. There are certain Chachomim Roshim. In the Gemara, it was Rav and Shmuel, Rav Yochanan, and Reish Lakish. And everything later developed based upon their analyses. And the Balei HaTosfos, it was Rabbeinu Tam, the Rashbam, the Ri HaZokain, and to a lesser extent, the Rashba, the two brothers, Rav Shimshon of Shans, Rav Shimshon of Ben Avram, and Rav Yitzchak Ben Avram, the Ritzva, who gave the basic questions, analyses, and all the later Chachamim studied them, culminating in the Tosfos HaRosh, the Rosh Lev, at the tail end of that period. And the Rosh's, the Rosh's code, the Rosh in the back of the Gemara, is really a summation of Ilah Halacha, all the analysis of the Chachmei Ashkenaz over two centuries. And that's why it's one of the three pillars of the Tur. The Tur is based, the Pesachim of the Tur are based primarily on the Rosh, and which is Ashkenazic tradition, and then the Riff of the Rambam, which is the Mesoros of the Chachmei Sfarad. What? The Tur quotes most extensively the Rosh, the Rambam, and the Riff. Plenty of others also. But if you were to boil it down, the Tur, the genius of the Tur is, he is putting together two unique Mesoros of Limud HaTalmud that took place in the Middle Ages. There were the Chachmei Ashkenaz, the culmination, which was the Rosh, right? And the Rosh's Rebbe, who was the giant of the era, the Maharam Rutenberg. That's why the Maharam is quoted so many times in the Rosh. But the Rosh gives you the Mesoros and the Tahalich of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, which the Tur of Ben HaRosh records. But in order to give it a more expansive picture, you have so many psukim based upon the Riff and the Rambam, which is a different part of the world and a different Mesoros. And those three Amudim, plus many of other Rishonim, are the basis upon which the Tur is based, and the basis of the Shulchan Aruch from there. It's sometimes good, occasionally, with the boys, to throw these points in. Give them some context. Give them some context. So that's one area where I think it's important to have some historical sense of what's going on. It kind of makes things come alive on the page.
Saying it's important for them so that it's more...
It just makes it a little bit more meaningful. The great problem I've always found, because I teach Jewish history, is kids see Jewish history, as by the way most adults do, Josh, in a vacuum. There's the world, and then there's the Jews. Now I know, Hein Am Levadad Yeshev, we're still part of the world. We are a unique entity in the world, we're still part of the world. And if for those kids who haven't, now some kids couldn't give a hoot about this. Right. In fact, I would imagine most kids don't give a hoot about this. But there are some kids who, in fact, will appreciate the fact that they can see things in context. So sometimes an occasional comment, this shouldn't be the centerpiece of the learning, obviously, but an occasional comment, putting things in context is good. I know even in class for me, when I mentioned the fact that Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam were brothers, and Rashi's grandsons, and then all the whole concept of Tosfos is Lahosif al Pirush Rashi. Basically, Tosefis al Pirush Rashi is the granddaddy of all Libra Torah in France and Germany, the Middle Ages, from his time on, and his grandsons got the ball rolling by questioning what Zayda had to say, some of the kids find that interesting. Some of them couldn't care in the least. But many of the kids find the fact that these are real people, flesh and blood human beings, and that there's a mishpacha connection between them, I think sometimes adds a little extra spice, a little zatz and pfeffer to the, it's not a centerpiece, Josh. Most kids couldn't give a hoot. But there are some kids for whom it's valuable.
Would you ever like print out the Wikipedia page on the Rush or something like that and like really go through who these people were?
Honestly, I might assign that to a kid who really has a historic, for most of them, not worth the effort. Not worth the effort. Better they should know, Rabbi Thomas says, you know, there's a very famous coach I love very much. Rav Yaakov Edlinger, the Aruch Lanier, was really the last, one of the last great Torah giants of Germany. He was Samson Rechtelhirsch's Rebbe learning. And he lived at the time of the Enlightenment in Germany, where you had a whole school of scholars, I could throw names out from me very much to you, so why bother, who were very interested in developing a scientific / university style study of Judaism. Okay? People interested in all the historical stuff. When did Rashi live? When did Rabbeinu Tam live? What were the historical circumstances they lived in? How did the Crusade persecution influence their thinking? All that kind of stuff, which you and I don't need to spend a great deal of time. Etlinger once said, the difference between me and my contemporary scholarly friends is they can tell you what ink Rashi used, what quill Rashi used, the kind of partial Rashi used, but I can tell you what Rashi said, which I thought was a very insightful comment. So this stuff is if I can borrow the term that, what do you call it, from Pirkei Avos, this stuff is good, Josh, it's paparos l'chochma. It's the salt, the pepper, it adds a little something to it. It's not a centerpiece. I don't spend any significant time in terms of asking the kids to research this. I know of yeshivas where they spend some time doing it. I think it's a waste of time. It only means something to somebody who's into the learning. If Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam and the Ri and Rashi and the Ramban and the Ritva and the Rashba and the Ran, if you're into their learning, then when you get to the context where they lived, it means something, but not the other way around. I find it doesn't work the other way around, except for a handful of kids who have a lot of interest in history. You've got the kids. For those kids, you might want to assign something like that. For most of the kids, it's worthless. Now, that was one point I wanted to make. Second point comes directly from other verses. I've heard this from you already. Second point comes directly out of the Gemara. The Gemara brings down an incident on the Hayamid Bays, which, if you don't know the history, means you don't know what's going on. You can't teach it to the kids. The Gemara brings down a Maisu to Rav Yehuda ben Tabai, where in his era it said, "Era ben Nochama, by golly, loose translation, im lo horanti eid zomeim, I executed one Eid Zomeim to teach the Tzedukim a lesson." Shimben Shata said, My, by golly, you are a murderer. What did you do? You're a murderer. And it says he was horrified when he realized what he had done. And Kibel Rav Elover Yehuda ben Tabai, he'll never pass in a Shiloh again without advice from Shimben ben Shetach. Strange Maisa. Anyone who learns Mishnayos knows you can't execute any Nizomim unless they've both been Nizomim. What was Yehuda ben Tabai doing? Strange story. Well, if you have some background, you understand the context of the story. And here's the background. Open up Pirkei Avos. Perek Aleph of Pirkei Avos has the Zugos. Those Chachamim listed in pairs, rings a bell vaguely? Which was the early Chachmei HaMishnah are listed in pairs. The first in the pair was the Nasi, the presiding officer of the Sanhedrin. The second was the Av Bezdin, his assistant. They worked in pairs. The Mishnah lists Yehuda ben Tabai and Shem ben Shatach as a Zug. They were the two presiding officers of the Sanhedrin. When did they live? Is key to understanding this. in the period following the Maccabean revolt, where the later Malchei Beis Chashmonai had become very assimilated, okay, was the era of Yehuda ben Tabish and ben Shetach. I refer you to two Gemaras, the Gemara in Samach Vava ben Aleph in Kedushin, and Memches Amalath in Brachos, the Kitzur Nimrutz. You're all vaguely familiar with the Tzedukin and the Perushin. That split in amongst the Chachamim developed during the era of the Maccabeim and their successors. And the Gemara mentions that Alexander Yanai, who was the grandson, of Matisyahu, maybe great-grandson, it says, had been a loyal devotee of the Perushim until convinced that he should dump the Perushim and side with the Tzedukim. Gemara's in Sabbath Bav in Kedush, I think we're working over there. He became a fanatical supporter of the Tzedukim and murdered all the Chachmei HaPerushim in his era. Harag Rov Chachmei Yisrael. With one exception. His brother-in-law, Shimon ben Shetach. The Gemara brings down an incident in the seventh Perek of Brachos, where there had been a big meal, and they wanted to bench, and Shalom Singha Hamalka, Mrs. Alexander Yanai, says, I'm going to bring you one of the Chachmei HaPerushim. Keep your hands off of him. Don't give him a hard time. She invites a brother in. Shimon ben Shetach and Yehuda ben Tabai, who I told you were pairs, lived in an era where the Tzedukim had grabbed control of the government and the Bate Dinim from the Perushim. So there had been an entire corruption of the whole judicial system, to use that term, at that particular time. And Shimon ben Shetach, with his sister's assistance, begins to revive and to bring back the influence of the Perushim. Take a look in Pirkei Avos. Look at the Maimorim in Pirkei Avos of both Yehuda ben Tamai and Shimon ben Shetach. They're all talking about proper vetting of witnesses, proper behavior of Dayanim. The whole theme of their Maimorim deal with Amitas HaBezdin. Bezdin has got to be honest, sincere, forthright. What were they doing that for? Because the Tzedukim had taken control, corrupted the whole judicial system. And now that the Perushim are being revived under the influence of Mrs. Alexander Yanai, who's getting her husband to lay off Josh a little bit, they're emphasizing, if we come back to power, we've got to clean up the act of the Dayanim at that particular time. All right? Now, that's the historical context when these two Chachamim lived. Now, I'll go back to the story. Yehuda ben Tabai is attempting to reclaim the power of the judiciary by the Perushim. And he's going to stick it to the Perushim. He's going to stick it to the Tzedukim by doing what? By executing an Eid Zomim, where there had been a Gemar Din, without the execution taking place. Because the Mishnah said, Tzedukim held Nefesh Benefesh. You only punish Eidim Zomimim if the Eidim Zomim have effectively gotten the victim executed. We know the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Om Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Shamati that the Bezdin has the power to punish and to fine people outside the context of the law. I call that extrajudicial power. It says not because that's the din, but rather it says to make a siyag l'Torah. There are times a Sanhedrin can exercise extrajudicial power. Shalom kahalocha, where there's an important need. So the Gemara mentions, again, contemporaneously to the era. It says a Sanhedrin executed one time someone who was horseback riding, even though horseback was always Ra'is or Drabonon, in order to bechazek Chilul Shabbos. And there were two or three other examples. That is what Yehuda ben Tabai was doing in his process of reclaiming the Dayanus and reclaiming the Shlita of the Chachmei HaPerushim. He was going to stick it to the Tzedukim by showing them, you got the halacha wrong, and I'm going to execute somebody after the Gemar Din, before he's executed, Shalok halacha. The aid Zomim was a single aid, and Me'ikar Adin, and he knew the halacha. You can't execute based upon that. But being that he was trying to show the Tzedukim, you guys are wrong, he exercised the power that Eliezer ben Yaakov says in Sanhedrin, every Bezdin has to sometimes exercise extrajudicial power and prerogative in order to drive home a point. And Shimon ben Shetach, the number two man in the Sanhedrin, says to him, no. Edim Zomimim is a rarity. Let's be realistic, guys. As we know from the Mishnayos, how often do you ever actually convict and execute any capital criminal? Rarely. Once in 70 years is called a...
Maybe it's called a...
Right? So here's the case. A guy actually gets nailed by two Edim. And lo and behold, two other Edim come in and prove one of them to be an Eid Zomim. Now, remember, in the same way that there's Drusha v'Chakira by the original Edim, there's Drusha v'Chakira by the Edim HaZomimim. How often is that scenario going to happen? It's so rare. So Shimon Shetach says, my dear colleague, my dear senior colleague, Yehuda ben Tabai, I know your intent is to stick it to the Tzedukim, but that's not how the world's going to interpret this. Since these cases are so few, far, and in between, the assumption is going to be that's the din. You're not accomplishing what you want to accomplish. You want to show the tzeduk and the din is mishas gamar din and not after the hariga of the innocent. You're not going to prove that point. People are going to interpret, especially in this era when things are so chaotic in the judiciary, that you're reestablishing the halacha is if you knock off one, you can kill him. So Shimon ben Shatach was mochiach Yudah ben Tabai, who had the best of intentions. What he did was a mistake. It didn't drive home the point of anything. It, quote-unquote, innocently had an aide killed. And then Yud Ben Tabai said, you know what? I really should take advice from my younger colleagues when it comes to making these extrajudicial decisions. Now, I know, guys, that's a mouthful. And teaching that to the kids, it's a mouthful. But if you understand it, A, your understanding of that mice makes a lot more sense now. Otherwise, it's a crazy incident. But again, put it in context. Who were these two Chachamim? What was going on in Eretz Yisrael at the time? The struggle of the Perushim to reestablish their superiority over the Tzedukim and to clean up the judiciary, to clean up the Bati Dinim. Yudah ben Tabai's attempt to do so by doing something extraordinary, which under extraordinary circumstances he is lahalocha allowed to do. Mem Vav HaMelef in Sanhedrin. Shim ben Shatai is mochiach to him, you're well-meaning, but it doesn't work. People are not going to interpret it as a siyag l'torah. They're going to assume that's the din. All of that makes sense. So my point is that sometimes you're going to run across gemaras like this where you know the circumstance of what's taking place. It means that you understand better what's going on. And when you understand it better, you're able to give it over to the kids that much better. In the same way that in general, I've always found that we can put aside all this historical stuff. When I prepare for my 10th graders, if I know much more than I'll ever teach, if I'm far more prepared than anything I'll ever teach them, I'm prepared for any question they have. I know the sugya well, and I will sift in my mind from the vast amount of material that I have prepared, quote unquote, what can the kids digest? What do I have to leave out? It's the same thing here. In terms of really preparing well, in certain Gemaras and certain Nagadata, if you know the context of the era in which it was said, it makes it that much more clear in terms of how you can teach. Now, how would you present what I just presented to you? Frankly, Josh, I don't know. I'll put it this way. I wouldn't hold the kids responsible for that information. I actually did say it over one day in Shir when I figured this all out. And in fact, by the way, as they're supposed to send it out, I actually typed this all up in Hebrew and sent to our lecture. I asked them to post it, just this background that I just gave you, just for everyone's edification. If I say it over once, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. Some kids are going to hear it. Some kids are going to pick up some details from it. I think it is still valuable for the kids to pick up. In the same way, as I said, pointing out to the kid in the midst of a context that, Rabbi Yochanan is quoted about Shas Bavli, he never stepped into Bavel, because there were Chachamim who constantly brought back and forth the Shmuos between Bavel and Eretz Israel. For some kids, I think it just puts it into a more live, into a live context. Just good to understand these things. Any questions or comments? Am I supposed to speak longer than this? Or that covers it? Okay. Anyway.
Regalachas, guys.